I will now call the fourth case on our oral argument calendar. That is case number A24-0537, Grobner & Associates, Inc. versus VW Dig LLC, doing business as VW Connect. We're slightly behind schedule. I apologize to counsel. We had some unexpected delays today. I believe you're familiar with our procedures, 15 minutes for each of you and 5 minutes of rebuttal for appellant's counsel. The lectern is adjustable with two buttons at the front edge. So, counsel for appellant, please identify yourself and your clients, and then you may begin.
May it please the court, counsel Seth Leventhal here on behalf of VW Dig LLC, doing business as VW Connect. I'm going to be brief in my argument here this morning, not because the court has run long in its previous cases, but because, honestly, I think the papers set out the issues with considerable clarity. I'm not sure, frankly, how much either of us can add to it here this morning in oral argument. Having said that, of course, I welcome any questions, concerns as to any aspect of the case, whether the law or the factual record. The record before the court is clear. There are two issues that are part of this appeal, as the court knows. One is an issue on which the district court granted partial summary judgment in favor of the plaintiff, Grobner, and the second is the outcome of a trial on a far more narrow issue that did actually go to trial.
Can I stop you for a minute and just, and I don't mean to be nitpicky, but was it partial summary judgment or was it something else under 5607?
It's a great question because the court...
It may not be material in this case, but still, I'm interested in the issue.
I found myself very puzzled by the court's characterization of its own order as denying the motion for summary judgment, which it did. That's the word it used. But what it did was it granted partial summary judgment on particular issues, the issue of contract formation, to be specific. It said and made it extremely unambiguous, the deal is done here in terms of a dispute between these parties as to whether or not there was a contract. I will not be hearing evidence or testimony as to that. There was. That's what the court found on their motion. So it was puzzling to have it described as a denial of a motion for summary judgment when, at a bare minimum, it was a partial grant. That is clear with the court's ruling that the only issue to be tried is the legibility of the print line on the gas sleeve and the seasonableness, if you will, of the objection to the illegibility of the print line. So on this first issue, which I characterize as a partial grant of summary judgment on the issue of contract formation, I think a fair reading of the record and of the court's opinion is the court simply didn't believe VW Connect. Said, I don't believe all of the evidence you provided that there was a complete disconnect between the two parties as to what the order was for. I ignore all of the evidence that you have provided, VW Connect, through Mr. Leventhal, of the fact that there was never a time when VW Connect said, sure, we want HDPE.
So, counsel, if you would, the district court found that Mr. Flores accepted the offer that was made by, I think it's Grobner. I hope I'm saying that correctly. So that's the district court's finding. What is the evidence that you submitted on summary judgment that disputes that?
If
I stated the finding wrong, feel free to correct me on that.
I think you're fair, and I think that is the one piece of evidence on which the court placed very heavy emphasis. And the point is that all of the evidence leading up to that was Grobner, which is, I understand how it's said, Grobner saying, is it okay if we supply you with HDPE? To whom did they ask at VW Connect? Relentlessly, Mr. Phil Woody, is it okay? He did not answer. He did not answer. He did not answer. Finally, they send a quote to Mr. Flores, which says, here is our quote, and it says literally, ordered by Phil Woody, and Mr. Florey says, we'll do the order. It was never ordered by Mr. Phil Woody. Mr. Flores did not have actual apparent or implied authority to make the decision.
So again, the district court's determination was that it was undisputed that I think it's Ms. Weir had indicated that Mr. Flores was, in fact, the person who would, let's see, confirm the agreements.
Right.
Based on a request for pricing. So in that context, is the district court's determination that apparent authority was undisputed, supported by the record, as of summary judgment?
Right. I would say it's a disputed issue. It's a factual issue on which there had to be evidence and testimony at trial. But
and what evidence do you rely on? And again, evidence submitted at summary judgment to make
right.
that?
The affidavit of Phil Woody, I believe also the affidavit of Sarah Weir, though I don't have it committed to memory. But there is no question, and also is seen in the entire context of the commercial relationship between these parties. Phil Woody was the decider. Grebner knew that Phil Woody was the decider. They did not pose this question ever, Mr. Flores.
So the law is pretty clear about the elements for apparent authority, and I read the district court's decision to have check the boxes on the legal requirements for apparent authority. So which of those three, I think you understand what I'm referring to. So which of those three boxes do you contend the district court made an error in finding apparent authority as an undisputed fact in the case?
Well, Your Honor, I would say, and I hope I'm responding directly to what you're saying, it was the representation to Mr. Flores that Mr. Woody ordered this, and the context of the relationship between the parties makes this either mutual mistake or unilateral mistake procured by fraud or mistake. I hope that's...
Well, no, I don't follow it. So why don't you go ahead and enlighten me? That sounds different from what I read in your brief, so let's go right ahead.
Well, what I'm trying to say is, if we were hypothetically to concede the argument that Mr. Flores, through his title, had authority, he was misled by Grebner. And a contract is voidable and void if procured by fraud or misrepresentation. Here it was. There was no meeting of the minds because essentially, there was, on VW Connect's side, a line of authority between Mr. Woody, Ms. Weir, and Mr. Flores, and Grebner misrepresented to Mr. Flores that Mr. Woody had already decided this issue. In other words, I guess, Your Honor, if we would have a different case here if Grebner submitted their quote and it did not say that Phil Woody had already ordered this, had not made that representation to Mr. Flores, which it did. And that would make the argument that Mr. Flores had the authority to issue the purchase order possibly decisive. But that is not the factual context that we're dealing with here in this case.
Mr. Levin?
Oh. Yes.
Well, maybe I was going to ask a question about the second issue. Maybe you were transitioning there. I don't know. But
well, I guess I will. I'll very briefly simply say that there is overwhelming evidence that VW Connect was prepared to offer into evidence on this first issue of its quote-unquote version of events. And that's what a trial is supposed to be. They had a right to submit this evidence. And there were so many disputed facts as to the course of conduct, the course of trade, course of performance, the context of these two entities discussing and negotiating this transaction, which were never able to be tried. So having said that, I will move to the second issue. Your Honor, and I can start with entertaining your question.
Well, maybe I'll hear you summarize your argument first, and then I'll follow up.
Well,
I've changed my mind. Thank you.
That's your prerogative. I guess I just ask the court to look at Exhibits 32, 34, 39, 40, 44, 71A, 71B, 73 Part 1, 73 Part 2. There is no legible print line. It isn't there. I could not believe that in response to questioning, there were witnesses who said, oh, yes, I see the print line, say, on Exhibit 32. It's here for the court. It's the same exhibit that was used in trial. And contrast these with Exhibit 73, Part 2, that's addendum pages 67 and 69, which shows print line on PVC and how it is supposed to look. And you compare and contrast those. Now,
if I may, but the court also found that because your client didn't raise this till what, you know, over a year after delivery, it wasn't seasonal, I think was the word used. If we think there's evidence to support that, do we even have to reach the second issue that you're talking about now?
Strictly speaking, you don't. But again, I would urge the court to look at the context. The day this HDPE showed up, they said, we don't want it, we can't use it, it is of the wrong material. Having said that, it seems odd to say, oh, and in addition, we can't read the print line. We don't want it whether we can read the print line at all. Then in the context of discovery in this case, they said, tell us how it doesn't conform. Of course, I, as counsel, said, we need to list all the ways it doesn't conform. They said, well, the print line isn't legible. I say, well, that's a separate, distinct thing, and we disclosed it in response to discovery in a timely fashion during discovery. So, and I think one of a key issue here is this issue that it disappeared over time. There is no basis for that anywhere. It was never raised at any time until trial. This is, and it was obviously unsupported by any testimony at any time by any qualified or competent expert.
Okay, well, here's where I'm going to ask the question I was going to ask, which is that without a transcript, I'm left to wonder quite a bit. I mean, you suggest in your brief that an expert is required, but I can imagine a lay witness giving testimony. I'm imagining it's possible for a lay witness to talk, especially someone who has worked with these kinds of materials over and over, to give some testimony that might shed light on this. But now I'm just wondering. And you have, you know, I think your opposing counsel has, with admirable restraint, refrained from telling us what happened at trial, what people testified to, and so on. But still, it's difficult for me even to kind of think about how do I begin analyzing this issue about whether that's an appropriate finding or an appropriate basis for the court's decision without a transcript.
I appreciate your giving credit to opposing counsel for not saying what was said at trial. I think I deserve the same credit.
Sure, yeah.
I am not arguing that this was said or not said. I am saying this is an issue for expert opinion. And I think that is actually something the court can rule on without a transcript. I don't think...
What if I'm overlooking the very competent and relevant testimony of a lay witness? And how do I know?
Right. There are times where if somebody comes before the court and says something of extraordinarily obvious, arcane, complex expert discourse, you can say you need to be an expert to express that opinion. You have... hypothesized today that someone who is a lay witness might have expertise, might have shown it, then they would be an expert witness.
Yeah, they could be a lay expert. You're right.
Right. And
that's another. So now there's more to wonder about. But.
Well, all I can say is there's no dispute that there was no expert testimony. We have said so in our papers. They have not countered to say, oh, yes, there was. There wasn't. And as I argued in our briefs, my client made the strategic decision with my advice, don't invest thousands of dollars to argue that there was no expert when we all know there was no expert. There was simply no expert. They won't argue otherwise because they're constrained by ethical obligations to admit that. And I just think it's self-evident that solar exposure to ink on gas sleeve is not the kind of thing that lay people have expertise in any more than they have about complex cloning or pharmaceutical manufacturing processes. You need an expert to offer those opinions, and here there obviously was no expert. I see I've run out of my time, so I will respond.
You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, please identify yourself and your clients, and then you may begin.
Morning. May it please the court. My name is Paul Chamberlain. With me today is, from my office, John Chamberlain, and on the briefs, Ryan Kuhlman. We represent Grebner & Associates, the respondent in this case. I'd like to address the points that are really fundamental here, and that is the standard of review. Just first of all, the standard of review for the second issue there about what happened at trial, there were no post-trial motions, and there was no transcript. And so then the narrowness of the review by this court is simply whether the findings of fact by the trial judge support the conclusions of law and the judgment. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, except there have been some questions about it and about the expert testimony. Judge McGill did lay out who had testified about the fading. He said that Stephen Karolewski and Ryan Ellis had many years of experience dealing with these materials. He also said that Mr. Phil Woody, who said that he covered the pipes with tarps, presumably to prevent any discoloration or degradation of the pipes, was not telling the truth. He said, I don't find that to be credible. And even Phil Woody, I believe it is in the record and the findings, said that they were destroyed and he had to replace them. Well, this is sitting in Arizona sun, desert sun, very hot, for a year and a quarter before any mention of it, and a year and a half before the photographs were taken. And there's simply no basis to conclude that that decision by the judge on that issue is wrong. I'd like to focus most of my attention on the portion of the decision which is subject to the more difficult standard of view of de novo review from a respondent standpoint. But I believe that our evidence here that the court considered is quite detailed. The motion for summary judgment is not just a one-sided operation. It takes two sides to it, and a respondent has to come forward with evidence that would rebut the allegation in the motion for summary judgment. And here we gave detailed written evidence. First of all, on two occasions, there was a spec sheet that showed that the product for sleeve it was made by high-density polyethylene, HDPE.
So, counsel, before you go into the evidence that was submitted on summary judgment, if you back up for just a moment to talk about the specific procedure here, the district court issuing some determinations that there were undisputed facts on summary judgment under Rule 5607. The rule talks about in an instance where the district court does not grant all relief requested by the motion. I think that's the language. So this is an order where the district court actually denied summary judgment, right?
It's true that they did not give a summary judgment, but I believe it's also true that it was a partial grant of summary judgment on the issue of contract formation.
So you agree with appellant's counsel that you'd characterize this as a partial grant, even though the order doesn't expressly say that? And when I say the order, I'm looking at the page one,
yes,
as opposed to the memorandum. And I think that's the way it was docketed as well, as a denial of summary judgment.
I agree with that. I think there's a partial grant of summary judgment that the court could find.
Well, I'm not contending either thing. I'm trying to find out what you think. So you agree with appellant's counsel that was a partial grant of summary judgment?
I do.
Okay. And that's why you think Rule 56, so I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, I'm trying to just understand your reasoning. So that's why you think Rule 5607 applies?
Yes. Okay. And I think the trial court cited 5607 in its order.
Oh, it does, definitely. Yeah. And I'm just trying to understand whether the ruling is procedurally accurate, I guess.
Okay. I believe it's procedurally accurate in the sense that there were some determinations as a matter of law about contract formation and about apparent authority and about offer acceptance and consideration, but could not go so far as to say that the print line issue could be decided as a matter of law, and so that had to be tried, and it was.
Mm-hmm. But going to the apparent authority determination of the district court, you heard an appellant's argument saying that the problem with making that determination on summary judgment isn't the text of the emails that the district court relied on. It's the fact that the VW Connect offered evidence suggesting that I think, is it Manon? I think Grebner's actor in this case misled Flores. So I'm not trying to put words in appellant's mouth either, but I think you heard the argument. I'd like to hear your response.
Okay. Well, first of all, there was no misleading. What happened was, you know, on July 20, there was an...
Well, again, I guess I want to just be clear. I'm not so interested in what you contend happened or didn't happen. I'm interested in whether there are disputed facts or evidence from which conflicting inferences can be drawn on apparent authority. So...
I believe there are no disputed facts there, Your Honor, for these reasons. It was decided based on objective evidence that VW Connect told us that the one who has authority, who has the title, purchase manager, had authority to make purchases, and he would confirm them in 3 days. And that email was copied to Phil Woody, who was executive vice president of operations of VW Connect. So if he saw that and wanted to dispute it, he would have said, wait a minute, this person doesn't have any authority when it does say he's the one that makes the orders. However, in addition, there was on just the day later after the order is done, because as Mr. Flores said, please move forward with this order, the next day he said in an email, I just spoke with Phil Woody about the first order. And then he said, let's go with 2 truckloads of the 1.5 and 1 of the 2-inch. And then Phil Woody himself, on August 27, just a couple days later, sent the order. He said, our first order, and gave him a purchase order number of that. And it would not have been a first order, and the trial court makes a distinction about this, if it were just simply PVC polyvinyl chloride, because this was a different product. There was... request to say, what is the status of our proposal? And Ms. Weir said, I believe it's waiting for Southwest approval on that. Southwest's own website says for gas sleeves, both PVC and polyethylene, are acceptable products to be used for gas sleeves. And there's nothing to support that. In the briefing, there was a statement saying that Southwest Gas had rejected the products. There's nothing in the record to support that. In fact, the affidavits that they cite of Ms. Weir and Mr. Woody don't say what they require there. They cite a number of paragraph 21 in Woody's declaration, paragraph 8 of the declaration of Sarah Weir do not say that we received a rejection from Southwest Gas. But my point on this is that you, when analyzing whether there's been an offer and acceptance here, and there is objective evidence of emails and written proposals, and there's a statement saying, follow the direction of Juan Flores, and then saying, go forward with the order, I'm the purchase manager, and I have apparent authority because I've got an email that went from VW Connect to Grebner, saying, follow the direction of our purchase manager, Juan Flores, in which case they did. And then he confirmed the order, said, please go forward with the order. And then there was evidence after that that it was not done in isolation, no deviousness or trying to trick him. We had no reason to do that. The confirmation is done by Phil Woody himself. So if they're relying on Phil Woody as a decision maker, and I don't deny that, except I do think that a purchasing manager has the right to make a purchase for a company, but it's certainly Phil Woody, who gets copied on all the emails, has to be in a position of saying, I see what happened here. And there's no doubt that the Sleevit had the products of the HDPE, and that's exactly what they ordered. The trial judge said there's no evidence that that was not the case, that it was properly done, that they ordered Sleevit. Sleevit is HDPE product, and they had the offered acceptance and consideration to form the contract. He only was unwilling to say in his summary judgment order that there was also the failure to timely object to it, because under the UCC, if you have a non-conforming order, you have to seasonably object to it, say, hey, you've got unclear print lines here on that. And there was nothing like that even mentioned until February of 2023, which was a year and a quarter after delivery. And if it was so significant that they would have rejected it anyway, it would have been very easy to say, hey, the print lines are bad. And yet even what counsel was saying about the evidence in the record of the exhibits, which I think is very narrow, shows that there's fading. You can see that some of these pipes have gone from yellow to white. And to say that that would not be evidence of something like that, that of fading in an Arizona sun, and you can only do that by expert testimony, that would require some pretty specific trial actions, such as objections on the ground that you don't have any competence to testify to that, or insisting that it be expert testimony. And there's obviously nothing in the record in that, because there is no record. And in fairness, I'm not going to tell you what happened at trial, because I just don't feel I can do that. But I can tell you what the trial judge said the evidence was, because that is perfectly appropriate for determining whether his findings support his conclusion of law, that there was no evidence that when delivered, the products had a blurry print line on them. And he said he therefore found in our favor. And in order to rebut that, it would take at least a transcript, or maybe a post-trial motion. But you narrow your scope of review to before this court to simply say, what is said by the trial judge in his findings, and what conclusions did the trial judge draw from the findings there for that piece of the puzzle? I consider that to be the determined part that would be very difficult to get any appellate relief. But I think it's equally clear, based on the documentary evidence here, that the contract was formed. Contracts under the UCC 2-204 are done not the same as you might have in the first part of law school. It can be done by conduct, and it can be done by formulating things, actions of people, combinations of emails and combinations of proposals, and yes, we accept. But here we've got an acceptance, we've got an order made that talks about Sleevit, we got an order acknowledgement, and everything that we should have done, we did by saying, we want to get approval. We gave them the specs. We followed up and said, has it been approved yet? They said, it's waiting approval from Southwest Gas. We wait, find, and said, do you want me to put that as part of the order proposal? And they said, yes, that would be great. And we do it. And then a month later, they say, go forward with the order. Please go forward with the order and confirm that with others in the company, including Sarah Weir and Phil Woody. So the entire batch of decision makers at VW Connect all had evidence that this transaction was happening. They even followed up later. And in the latter part of it, after the delivery had occurred, there was another email that came from a man named Dominic Price of VW Connect, who said, I'm working on this, trying to get this worked out with Southwest approval. Give me some time. I think we can get it done. And then we didn't hear a while and followed up, and he said, the people who are in the area supervisor say it's fine, but they're just waiting for the compliance manager to give us final approval. So they say that they didn't were surprised by it, or that they were not you're trying to get it done is simply contradicted by the record and contradicted by the people at Southwest Gas saying it's okay, and Southwest Gas's own website, which says either product is fine. So it's a red herring saying that you can't have your contract after everything you did. Go forward with authority, and we order it, we deliver it, and then end up having this kind of dispute where you say we didn't have apparent authority for a man who's a purchasing manager who copies the other executives on the decision-making, and then says that a year and a quarter later can come up for the first time with the things about fading in Arizona Sun saying you got a blurry print line. Simply won't work. We have a contract that was performed. We did everything right. The trial judge found that was the case, and we should have our judgment affirmed on appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chamberlain. Mr. Leventhal, you have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you. I'll be very brief. Everything that Counsel for Grebner just said in the factual sort of recitation was one-sided, and the other side is consistent with VW Connect's position and has been throughout this entire lawsuit. For example, after the transaction that is in dispute here, Mr. Flores copied Mr. Woody on an email. That is true. Mr. Woody would have testified, first of all, that he had never approved for HDPE. He was unaware that HDPE had been ordered, and he never wanted HDPE. He was not allowed to testify to that because of the court's ruling on summary judgment. Also, Sarah Weir sent an email to Grebner saying, I believe we're waiting for approval from Southwest. There is no approval from Southwest. There has never been approval from Southwest. Sarah Weir would have been able to testify to that. Mr. Woody would have been able to testify to that. It's notable that Counsel for Grebner didn't highlight that the second this shipment arrived, the day it arrived, they went out and looked at it and said, we don't want it. This is the wrong product. That's a pretty important piece of information supporting the fact that there was never a meeting of the minds as to what was being bought, and that there was never an agreement by VW Connect to get HDPE. Moving to the issue of the print line and the sun fading, Grebner Council has highlighted that some of the pipe had been faded from lighter yellow to darker yellow. There is actually no evidence of that. There was no actual testimony by anyone. There can be color variation in a product, obviously. We don't know if that color variation was from day one or from day 365. There was no testimony that that happens. I will note, I found it interesting and concerning that the trial court found Mr. Woody's testimony incredible, but offered absolutely no explanation for why. There was no identification of any impeachment. There was no identification of any cross-examination of any kind. There was no identification of any inconsistency.
Well, counsel, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought the district court explained that it found Mr. Woody's testimony not credible as to covering the product to with tarps, and that was based on the evidence the district court heard about fading of the print line and the photographs.
Well, that's
isn't that what the district court explains in the findings post-trial?
I think you're right that the specific testimony that the district court said it didn't find credible was about covering the gas sleeve with tarps. But again, so it's sort of turning it logically upside down to say because it was faded by sun, we don't believe it was covered by tarps, as opposed to, well, it's not clear that it was faded by sun at all. So what is not credible about the covering of it by tarps? But again, there is no, the photos actually show tarp, which are in evidence in this case. Finally, I'll just touch on the fact that Grebner Council takes VW Connect to task for not bringing post-trial motions, but this was a bench trial. The court did have post-trial proposed conclusions of law and findings of fact by VW Connect, which raised these issues, specifically raised that there was no expert testimony as to this. So the issue was raised before the trial court and never addressed by the trial court.
So, counsel, I don't disagree with you on the point that you make about post-trial motions. I am wondering about your response to respondent's argument that because the appellant here has failed to provide this court with a transcript, our standard of review is limited to determining whether the findings of fact support the conclusions of law and whether the conclusions of law support the district court's order for judgment. And they do cite legal authority to that effect.
Right. So can you make a finding of a fact as to what in our view is an expert issue, which is the permanency or lack of permanency?
I'm talking just generally. Set aside this expert testimony question for a moment, but generally, does our standard of review change, as explained in respondent's brief, because the appellant did not provide a transcript?
Well, you certainly can't draw any inferences about any testimony when you don't have a transcript.
Well, we never draw inferences at the Court of Appeals.
You can't make any conclusions or base anything on what was said or not said at trial, except you can base your opinion on the fact that there was literally no expert testimony on this issue because it's not contested.
And I don't think that's disputed, counsel, just so I do understand you in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leventhal. Thank you to both counsel for your briefing and your oral arguments. The case is submitted, and the court will issue its opinion in writing within 90 days. That is the final case on today's oral argument calendar, so the court is now in recess.